Welcome to SCOTUscast. On June 26, 2008, the Supreme Court decided the District of Columbia v. Heller case. The decision, in striking down the D.C. gun ban, held that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to possess a firearm, unconnected with service in a militia, and to use that arm for traditionally lawful purposes, such as self-defense within the home. Nelson Lund, the Patrick Henry Professor of Constitutional Law and the Second Amendment at the George Mason University School of Law, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Lund.
This is Nelson Lund, podcasting for the Federalist Society and yesterday's decision in District of Columbia versus Heller. I'm a professor at George Mason Law School. I've written on the Second Amendment, and I filed an amicus brief supporting Heller's position in this case. The case arose from a challenge to a D.C. law which banned almost all civilians from possessing handguns and which required all firearms to be kept unloaded and either disassembled or secured with a trigger lock. This law made it impossible for law-abiding citizens to keep an operable firearm at home for self-protection. By a narrow 5-4 majority, the Supreme Court held that both provisions of the law violate the Second Amendment. Justice Scalia's majority opinion concluded that the federal government may not ban an entire class of weapons, like handguns, that Americans overwhelmingly choose to keep at home for self-defense. The safe storage regulation was also struck down because it makes it impossible for citizens to use a gun for the core lawful purpose of self-defense. Much of the court's very lengthy opinion analyzes the language of the Second Amendment and the historical evidence that shows how that language would have been understood by the American public when the Bill of Rights was adopted. Justice Stevens' dissenting opinion largely accepts this approach, but argues that the majority misreads both the language and the historical evidence. The principal disagreement between the majority and the four dissenters has to do with the relationship between the Second Amendment's preface and its operative clause. The text of the Second Amendment reads as follows. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Reducing a very complex debate to the simplest possible terms, I think we can summarize the main points as follows. Justice Stevens and the other dissenters believe that the Second Amendment's prefatory language means that the right to keep and bear arms is only a right to have the weapons required for service in a state-regulated militia. Justice Scalia, for the majority, agrees that the Second Amendment was adopted for the purpose of preserving the militia. Unlike Stevens, however, Scalia concludes that the militia exists apart from state-regulated military organizations. Even more important, Scalia thinks that the right to arms protected by the Second Amendment existed before the Bill of Rights was adopted. In Scalia's view, the Second Amendment's preface explains why that right was codified, but it says nothing at all about what that right is. Scalia's reading of the text and history leads him to conclude that the pre-existing right extends to traditionally lawful purposes, including, at a minimum, self-defense within the home. This decision is an important victory for the rights of law-abiding American citizens. Scalia's refutation of the Stevens interpretation is overwhelmingly powerful, and the core right to have a gun for self-defense is now fixed in constitutional law. Scalia's opinion is also an important declaration by the court of respect for the original meaning of the Constitution, which is strengthened by the fact that even the dissenters felt obliged to engage Scalia in a debate about the original meaning. The implications for the future, however, are quite murky. Among the most urgent questions left open by the Heller decision is whether the 14th Amendment makes the Second Amendment applicable to state and local governments. Justice Scalia's opinion contains some language suggesting that the Second Amendment will indeed be incorporated under the 14th Amendment, but the question was left open. Potentially more problematic are questions about the interpretive methodology applicable in future cases dealing with laws that are less extreme than the total civilian disarmament attempted by the District of Columbia. Justice Scalia's opinion insists that questions about the scope of Second Amendment rights will be decided on the basis of an historical inquiry. This appears to mean that arguments about the costs and benefits of modern gun control regulations should be almost entirely irrelevant to the constitutional analysis. The four dissenters joined a separate dissent, written by Justice Breyer, that argued that any private right to arms must be subjected to an interest balancing inquiry, which would be informed by an empirical cost-benefit analysis of the challenged regulation. Scalia dismisses this entire inquiry on the ground that the relevant interest balancing has already been done by the Constitution. It is not entirely clear how the historical analysis adumbrated by the court will be conducted. Does Scalia mean that modern gun control statutes will be struck down unless they have some reasonably close analog in 18th century common law or 18th century statutes? Or will it permit regulations that have been widely adopted and accepted in modern times? If so, how widely accepted must they be, and by whom? Scalia's opinion includes dicta, indicating that some important forms of gun control will be upheld. Examples include bans on carrying concealed weapons, disarmament of convicted felons, gun-free zones, and what Scalia calls sensitive places, like schools and government buildings, restrictions on the commercial sale of firearms, and bans on what Scalia calls dangerous and unusual weapons, apparently including short-barreled shotguns and machine guns. These dicta raise some troubling questions. Consider just three examples. Is it truly consistent with the original meaning of the Second Amendment to leave an American citizen defenseless for the rest of her life just because she was convicted of a nonviolent felony like tax evasion or insider trading? On what basis will courts decide whether particular places are sufficiently sensitive to justify disarming citizens who go there? Did the whole city of New Orleans, for example, become a sensitive place after Hurricane Katrina, thus allowing the government to confiscate weapons from law-abiding citizens whom the government did not and could not protect from roving bands of looters and criminals? Did short-barreled shotguns, which are very useful for self-defense and in many cases superior to handguns, become dangerous and unusual just because Congress decided to restrict them in 1934? Heller is unquestionably a landmark decision, but we don't know yet whether it will prove to be the kind of seminal decision that will lead to a truly robust protection of the fundamental right to self-defense.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.